2022 NFL Draft, the Tennessee Titans select Treylon Burks, wide receiver, Arkansas.
So there you go, a big physical receiver out of Arkansas to replace the big physical receiver out of Ole Miss that they didn't want to spend $100 million on.
Of course, that wide receiver that the Tennessee Titans did not want to spend $100 million on would be one A.J. Brown, as he is on the move to the Philadelphia Eagles. And Treylon Burks is now the big physical receiver for the Tennessee Titans from the Arkansas Razorbacks. That obviously was one of the biggest deals, one of the biggest moments of night one of the NFL draft, really of both nights that we have seen so far of NFL draft 2022. Hello again, my name is Kerry Wood. Just call me C Wood for short. And you are tuned in to Ball About the South with C Wood, Ball About the South. It is that sports podcast where we talk real sports and we do it with real Southern flavor. I want to welcome you in for another episode. This is episode 26. And like I said, man, the NFL draft is in full blast and the Tennessee Titans made one of the bigger moves that we're probably going to see in this draft at all. The blockbuster move where the Titans received the 18th pick and basically just immediately flipped it for, in a lot of ways, the same type of guy. I'm not going to say the same guy because, you know, again, you know, you sit there and you kind of compare guys, you compare different players or whatever. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Treylon Burks is exactly A.J. Brown. But I will say that Treylon Burks is a lot like A.J. Brown. And, you know, you don't see deals like that too often. You know, we're used to seeing deals in the draft all the time. There's nothing new about that. But to see it come about the way this one did, and then basically the trade is announced as, you know, as really that was supposed to have been the Eagles pick at 18. The trade is announced, and then right after the trade is announced, you're basically announcing the successor to the main player that's involved in the deal. That doesn't happen that often, man. it just doesn't. Yeah, you know, so huge moment there in the draft, and the Tennessee Titans have it, man. And you know, let's talk about this. If we're going to talk some NFL draft, the first two nights, of course, we're going to kind of talk about a few things. Not going to get too deep because what I want to do is come back next week and we'll do some draft grades for each of the NFC and AFC South teams and just kind of an overview of the draft in general when I come at you next week. So I just kind of want to do a little brief summary of what we've seen so far in the first two nights in this episode. And for me, man, obviously that has been a huge topic among Titan Nation. I don't know if that's what you call it, Titan Nation, but amongst Tennessee fans, man, Titans Twitter, all of that. Obviously, this has been the huge topic, and you're either on one side of the fence or you're on the other. I mean, I guess you could straddle the fence. For me, I am on the positive side of the fence. I think this is a positive move for the Tennessee Titans. I mean, look, no one wants to see A.J. Brown leave Nissan Field. I mean, no one wants to see A.J. Brown in another uniform that's involved with the Titans, that call themselves a Titans fan. And I don't think the organization itself wanted to do this. But it's a business deal. I mean, that's basically what it comes down to. It's a business deal where the Titans, I think, felt like they could get equal, you know, I'm not, again, let me rephrase it. I'm not going to say equal value, but I think that they think that they at least have comparable value And they can do it a lot cheaper than a guy like Treylon Burks. That's what this, I mean, that is all this is about. It's very simple. And that way, if you feel like you can do that, then you can kind of move some of that money that you were going to pay A.J. Brown to other parts of your football team and improve your team in other aspects. So, for me, I think it's a positive deal for the Titans. A lot of people maybe think that the Titans didn't receive enough in exchange for A.J. Brown. I can kind of see that. You know, you get the 18th pick and you get the 100 first pick. It is what it is. It is what it is. But I do think Treylon Burks has the juice. I think being an Arkansas Razorback, I've gotten to see a lot of him following the SEC. And this dude's one of the best offensive players in the SEC. I don't think there's any question about that. One of the best receivers in this draft. And, I just think it's a really good move for the Titans, man. I think that Treylon Burks will be a seamless addition to that Titans offense. So, yeah. I think that Ryan Tannehill is going to enjoy having this guy around. You pair him up with Robert Woods on the other side of this formation and everything. It's hard to say goodbye to A.J. Brown. It's definitely not an easy thing. Because A.J. Brown was unquestionably one of the best receivers in this league. There's no question about that. And he's one of the most physically dominating receivers that we've seen in a long time. The way that he can, his size and his physical presence can overwhelm defensive backs. There's no question about it. And then, of course, he has the speed to beat you deep. And it's not going to be easy to lose this guy, A.J. Brown. But seeing a guy like Treylon Burks is going to, in my opinion, make it a whole lot easier. Speaking of Ryan Tannehill, at the quarterback position, the Titans weren't done making a splash on night one of the draft. They thought, you know what? We're going to make a splash on night two as well.
The Las Vegas Raiders have traded the 86th pick to the Tennessee Titans. With the 86th pick in the 2022 NFL Draft, the Tennessee Titans select Malik Willis, quarterback, Liberty.
Wow, there we go. Okay, so the Liberty quarterback, Malik Willis, his long wait is over.
Indeed, the wait for Malik Willis was over, and Malik Willis is now a Tennessee Titan. How about that, man? Coming into this draft, there had been a lot of speculation that the Titans might take a quarterback. Possibly, even though knowing this quarterback class was not the best, not the most talented or whatever, not really a quarterback that you can point to and say, you know what, that's going to be our franchise QB for the next 10, 15 years or whatever. No one really looked that way for sure in this crop of QBs or whatever. But I tell you what, man, when the Pittsburgh Steelers, because I really thought the Steelers were probably going to be the team that would draft Malik Willis, when they passed on him and they went with Kenny Pickett, the quarterback from Pittsburgh, this was the one I was like, okay, you know what? This has got to be it for the Titans. I thought that the Titans might take Malik Willis at number 20 at 26. The Titans traded that pick away, and they traded down in the draft or whatever. And I thought, okay, well, maybe they'll get him in the second round. They didn't do it in the second round, and he stayed out there. No one else picked up Malik Willis, and the Titans basically had a chance to get him again. And this time, they did not fail with the 86th pick, Malik Willis, the Liberty University Flames. He is the newest member of the Tennessee Titans. I tell you what, the pick just makes a lot of sense. It just really does. I think that you picked him at a point where obviously it's not that big of a stretch or whatever. There were people thinking, okay, you know what, maybe we could draft Malik Willis in the first round. And so you get him toward the end of the third round. That's really good value for a guy that obviously there are a lot of people that think it's going to take a couple of years for him to be ready to, be a true starting NFL quarterback. Malik Willis is the guy that I've seen a lot of. He's former Auburn quarterback that really never got a chance at Auburn. He moves on to Liberty and plays under Hugh Freeze, big time offensive coordinator from Ole Miss. Well, turned head coach at Ole Miss. And then, of course, he had everything go on there at Ole Miss with the scandals there. And then he ends up with Liberty. And Malik Willis heads that way. And he's been his quarterback the last two or three seasons. And this dude just the dude is electric, man. I mean, the dude is electric with the football, whether it's running the ball, whether it's throwing the ball. He can get the ball downfield. Obviously, this is not a big guy. He's only 6 foot, maybe 6 foot and a half, 220 pounds, maybe a little bit lighter than that. But, I mean, you just sit there and look at this guy, man, and again, there's a lot of things that he needs to work out. He's, in some ways, you'd even maybe call him a little bit raw because, he threw a lot of interceptions here the last couple of seasons, especially this last season. I don't think he had quite the personnel around him that he had in the previous season there at Liberty. I think that kind of had a lot to do with that. But this dude, man, the thing that I had said on a couple of occasions on Twitter was like, I would be afraid not to pick this dude. Because you see some of the guys that, Lamar Jackson's, was a guy that was looked over by several teams that definitely could have used a quarterback. If you're a team that needs a quarterback or a team that has a question mark at quarterback, I would have been scared not to pick this dude. Because if this dude comes in here, he gets in the league and he pans out the way some people think that he can, you're going to have egg on your face big time. Big time. So teams like, Carolina did get their quarterback last night. They did sign Matt Corral. For me, I think I would have chosen Malik Willis over Matt Corral. That's just me. And I was big on Matt Corral, and I talked about him on this show, of course, on several occasions, quarterbacking the Ole Miss Rebels. I think Matt Corral, with the right system, the right coaching, if he can stay healthy, I think Matt Corral could be a productive quarterback in the NFL as well. This dude, to me, though, can be special. But it just may take him a little bit of time to get there. And I guess that was what a lot of teams were looking at. And then, of course, I think maybe they were looking at, okay, you know what? Well, we're not going to go at our quarterback this season. We're going to go at our quarterback next season. When there's guys like Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud and supposedly many others that are going to be on that list next season. So, in which, again, I'm not mad at that strategy. I'm just saying, I'm some of these teams that are really questionable at the quarterback position. I think you're sitting there hoping that this thing does not pan out for the Tennessee Titans. You're sitting there because if it does, and this dude turns out to be what a lot of people think he could be, it's not going to be pretty. It's not going to be pretty at all. So this was the Titans' plan all along, according to a lot of people that are in the know about the Titans, to find that guy that they can groom behind Ryan Tannehill for the next season or two. So, that being said, how does Ryan Tannehill feel about this? Obviously, you know he's not going to feel too good. Okay, I mean, you're basically, this is basically a Jordan Love, Aaron Rodgers type situation. I don't think there's any question. Now, of course, the difference with that, Jordan Love was picked in the first round. Malik Willis, of course, was picked toward the end of the third round. So there's obviously a lot of difference. And, of course, Aaron Rodgers was not happy about that. And there's some reasons so far in this draft that I don't think Aaron Rodgers is too happy about this draft either currently, as the Green Bay Packers have pretty much neglected the glaring need for wide receiver. We'll talk about that in a later time, but which that's a very interesting development in itself, I think. But, you know, that's basically what we're looking at here. So you hope that Ryan Tannehill is not going to feel some sort of way about the Titans drafting a QB or drafting his possible successor. But I think this is a sound move by the Titans. I think this is what you this is being proactive. You're sitting there. You're basically tied into Tannehill right now. While obviously a lot of people would love to maybe move on from Tannehill, especially fans. I'm not talking about the organization. I'm just meaning fans or whatever. You don't want to lose that that experience. I mean, this is a team that is still Super Bowl ready. This is a team that can compete for the Super Bowl. Okay, Ryan Tannehill threw those interceptions in that playoff game last season against the Cincinnati Bengals. Obviously, it was not a good look, but let's be real about it. He doesn't throw those picks, man. You're sitting there talking about a team that probably kicks that field goal, wins that game, and then they're hosting the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC title game. You got to like the Titans' chances of winning that football game. So, while, yes, I mean, it would be great to if the Titans had someone else. A lot of people, of course, they had those talks about Aaron Rodgers possibly coming here and all of that. Obviously, that did not happen. I'm glad it didn't happen, to be honest with you. But, you know, you have a team that is set to compete for a Super Bowl. While a lot of people are not going to sit there and view it that way nationally. I mean, the Titans don't get hardly any love. They hardly get any love when talking about contenders or teams that are in contention for the Super Bowl or whatever. The Titans are never talked about. But, I mean, the proof is in the pudding, and the proof is right there that, you know, the Titans finished that game against Cincinnati. They probably go to the Super Bowl this past season. So, you know, it's a delicate situation. You don't want to sit there and piss off your current quarterback and everything, but you got to look ahead to the future knowing that maybe Ryan Tannehill is not the dude, and maybe – you can groom one of these guys into being the dude. And I'll tell you what, if you can groom this guy correctly, Malik Willis may just be one of the most special quarterbacks that we see in a long time. So anyway, Malik Willis is a Tennessee Titan. I cannot tell you how excited I am to see how that materializes. Obviously, a lot, you know, several other picks. Again, the Titans were very active. Three trades. Three of them, count them. Trade up to get Treylon Burks. They made a trade to trade the 26th pick out of the first round. And then, of course, they made the trade to get to the 86th pick and pick Malik Willis. Again, we'll get deeper into some of that, like I said, in my next episode. Obviously, the big number one pick overall belongs to the Jacksonville Jaguars. And we sat here wondering where would they go? Would it be Aiden Hutchinson? Would it be Trayvon Walker? They decided on the Georgia Bulldog. Trayvon Walker is headed to the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think it's an excellent pick. very athletic dude, to say the least. I think pretty versatile. Georgia played him a lot inside on the offense, on the defensive line, but then I think that he probably is going to be a lot better on the outside. Jacksonville, I mean, I don't know, man. Jacksonville always seems to come up with these really good defenders, man, and for whatever reason, some have panned out, some haven't. But this dude, I think, is going to pan out. And maybe they'll get that pass rush together. Maybe this is the move that gets the Jacksonville Jaguars, at least on the right track. Okay? I mean, again, this thing, it's going to take a minute for the Jags to really get, I think, situated and really get to a point where they can talk about contending or anything like that. But this is, I think, a step in the right direction. So, and then I tell you what, one of the big surprises of the night was one Derek Stingley Jr. I obviously, he was one of the big question marks of this draft. Did not play last season for the LSU Tigers. I mean, the shutdown corner for the Bayou Bengals. This dude goes number 3 overall. I cannot believe that, to be honest with you, man. Everyone, I think, thought that he would go probably maybe even like 20. As low as 20 in this draft. I didn't think he would last that long. I was thinking maybe like in the teens, 13, 14, 15, somewhere in there. This dude goes number 3 overall, which was, man, I was floored by that pick. But I think the Houston Texans made a huge, huge find. I think they have a really good, obviously, a really good pick here. I don't think there's any question about that. 6'1", 195 pounds. This dude, again, and you sit there and you think of all the big-time corners that have come through the SEC, that have come, you know, LSU. I mean, obviously, he wears number 24, the same number as one Champ Bailey, is one guy that comes to mind. This dude, I think, can be up there with all of those guys if he can stay healthy. And I'm hoping that he will, man. That, you know, this is one of the most imposing corners that we've seen in a while come through the SEC. So I'm happy for this dude. And he goes to the Texans. Doesn't have to go too much further. I mean, just going from Baton Rouge to Houston, that's not a long drive at all for one Derek Stingley Jr. Of course, in between Trayvon Walker going to Jacksonville and Derek Stingley Jr. going to Houston, the number 2 pick was Aiden Hutchinson. He stays in the state of Michigan. How about that? He was picked by the Detroit Lions, that big edge rusher from the Michigan Wolverines. Hutchinson looks to be the real deal as well. I think it's a fantastic pick for the Detroit Lions, man. I don't know, man. Again, this is going to be a big-time thing. We'll see if Trayvon Walker, who turns out to be the better pick, Trayvon Walker or Aiden Hutchinson. We'll see. At number 4, Mr. Sauce. Sauce Gardner. Ahmad Gardner is his real name, from the cornerback from the Cincinnati Bearcats. He goes to the New York Jets, and I tell you what, the New York Jets, man, you sit there and you look at some of their picks. They get Sauce at number 4. Then at number 10, they go out, they get Garrett Wilson. He is the first of those big-time Ohio State wide receivers off the board. That is a huge pick, in my opinion. I think those are two winners for the Jets. And then I think maybe the pick of the night in night 1. For me, the steal, you know, and this was Tennessee's spot. Jermaine Johnson from Florida State, the edge rusher for the Seminoles, goes to the Jets as well. You're talking about 3 big-time picks. 3 huge picks for the Jets. I think these are the type picks that can really start to change your franchise over. Of course, now, when you're talking about the Jets, obviously, you have your core questions about your quarterback and everything, but I tell you what, the Jets the New York Jets, Jets killed it with those three picks in the first round. I don't think there's any question about that. Again, I talked about Garrett Wilson being the first Ohio State receiver off the board. Didn't have to go too much further for there to be the second pick off the board, and he is going to the New Orleans Saints, Chris Olave. And he joins Michael Thomas, who's obviously another Ohio State Buckeye. The Saints love themselves some Buckeyes, man. And Chris Olave is a big-time receiver. He had a pretty fast 40 time there at the Combine in Indianapolis. We already knew about this dude's route running and his everything else about this dude is smooth. And going to be interesting. Interesting pick. I mean, I think the Saints had some other needs that they probably could have addressed. I'm not shocked that they went a wide receiver right here. But, you know, with Michael Thomas coming back, I'm not sure if that was the optimal pick that they could have made. But there's no question about this dude's abilities. I don't think there's any question about that. So if you put him on the other side, if he pans out, put him on the other side of Michael Thomas, you got something there, in my opinion. So, and I'm sure that one Jameis Winston is happy to see that pick go down to the New Orleans Saints. And then, of course, despite the fact that this dude went to the University of Alabama last season and just killed it, just killed the SEC at the wide receiver position. There are going to be a lot of Buckeye fans saying, you know what, this is an Ohio State ball guy. This is all Ohio State ball player. And in a lot of ways, they're correct. I'm not too mad at them saying that, because if the tables were turned and he went from Alabama to Ohio State, I would be touting him too. Just the way we did Jalen Hurts when he went to Oklahoma. We still claim Jalen Hurts like he he did actually graduate from Alabama, truth be told, of course, but we still claim him to be an Alabama Crimson Tide in that right shade of crimson. I mean, you know, I know that Oklahoma says they wear crimson and cream or whatever. We wear crimson and white. So much like we did Jalen Hurts, Ohio State is their fans are doing Jameson Williams. When Jameson Williams goes to the Detroit Lions, you know, not the place I would rather him go. I mean, there are a lot of places I definitely would love to have seen him go to above the Detroit Lions. There's no question about that. But I'm still happy for this dude, man. And Jameson Williams, obviously he went through the injury there in the national championship game, the ACL. He looked really good walking up to the podium and, you know, giving Roger Goodell and all of that. So, again, I think he's going to be just fine. This dude has speed for days, and he is going to be unleashing that speed at Ford Field in Detroit. So I'm happy for him anyway. So you look at three Ohio State wide receivers back-to-back-to-back at numbers 10, 11, and 12. Let's talk about the picks just before that. Okay, yeah, the number seven pick, Evan Neal, he is headed to the New York Giants, the former Alabama left tackle, 6'7", 337 pounds. This is a huge get, I think, for the Giants as they back that up at their number five pick with this dude, Kayvon Thibodeaux, the edge rusher from Oregon. I think, in my opinion, maybe the best edge rusher in this draft, at least I'll put it like this. I think he's the most versatile, most athletic at the edge. I thought those were two fantastic picks by the New York Giants. So the Jets and Giants, they got their thing going. They did their thing in round one of this draft. I don't think there's any question about that. And then you move on, the number eight pick, another wide receiver, and he actually was the first wide receiver taken off the board, Drake London. And I thought, you know, for me, obviously, we've seen the tape on this guy. He's a big, tall receiver, 6'4". He can go up, climb the ladder, get passes. You know, obviously, he's going to be a big-time red zone target for, well, this season it would be Marcus Mariota. Don't know who the quarterback would be going, who, you know, in the future, who knows who the quarterback will be. But for this season, and at least for the foreseeable future, this guy is going to be, I would think, a big-time red zone target for Marcus Mariota. Obviously, you sit there and you put him next to a guy like Kyle Pitts, and you got something, man. A lot of athleticism, a couple guys that can go up and get the ball with the best of them. So, you would think that Marcus Mariota's definitely happy to see that pick. I don't know if I would have gone him as the first receiver off the board, but obviously it's not a bad pick at all for the Falcons, I don't think. Then you look at number 9, Charles Cross, the left tackle from the Mississippi State Bulldogs. He goes to the Seattle Seahawks. I think that's a good trade. No, not a good trade. A good deal for the Seahawks. That was part of that trade with the Denver Broncos, if I'm not mistaken. The only thing about it, man, you sit there and you sit there, if you're the Seahawks, now you go at guys that can protect the quarterback, that now that Russell Wilson is out of town. It's a little bit backwards there, to say the least, but it is what it is. So, obviously, as you can see, a lot of SEC flavor in those first 10 picks. You had a lot of Georgia flavor. Obviously, the Bulldogs had 5 players chosen in the first round. Ended off with Lewis Seen, which was maybe a little bit of a surprise that he went in the first round. It definitely a surprise that he went in the first round over N'Kobe Dean, the linebacker from Georgia. N'Kobe Dean went all the way to the 83rd pick, which is just, I have no idea what that's about. I have no idea how in the world N'Kobe Dean lasted that long. But that is an excellent pick for the Philadelphia Eagles, who are setting themselves up pretty well, on both sides of the ball, especially offensively. You look at some of the other picks from the SEC that we had. Kyer Elam, he is a Buffalo Bill. He was taken 23rd overall. Quay Walker, the linebacker from Georgia, he was taken by the Green Bay Packers with the 22nd pick. And, again, we talked about Treylon Burks. Kenyon Green, he went 15 overall to the Houston Texans. So the Texans went SEC on both of their picks. And then at number 13, again, like I've been talking about, the Philadelphia Eagles. They go Jordan Davis, the big defensive lineman from the Georgia Bulldogs. Athletic, we all know about him. We talked about him kind of on a negative tip there after the SEC Championship game, after he kind of had some moments there. We looked like he was kind of winded and everything. He made a big-time comeback in that National Championship game and played very well. I think he is going to be just fine there. I think that was a really good pick for the Philadelphia Eagles. And, just a lot going on in the draft. Had some guys. We had a couple of Kentucky guys taken in the second round. Wandale Robinson was one of them. He's the wide receiver. You may remember him. The Washington Commanders. It doesn't matter what team Washington is, whether they're the Redskins, whether they're the football team, or whether they're the Commanders, they are going to pick somebody from Alabama. And they did it twice last night in the second round, the second and third round, to get Fedarian Mathis, the defensive lineman, in the second round with the 47th pick. And then they turn around and they get one Brian Robinson Jr., the running back. They get him in the third round. The Washington team, I'm not going to say, because, again, we've had the Redskins, we've had the football team, and now the Commanders, they love themselves some Alabama football players. It's just crazy to sit there and see how many players have gone from Alabama to Washington over the last several years. Really crazy. Again, we talked about Matt Corral really briefly going to the Carolina Panthers. He went 94th overall. Again, we're going to get deeper into a lot of these picks again on my episode next week. Just wanted to kind of give an overview. Really like the draft so far by the Tennessee Titans. Again, I think a lot of people question Treylon Burks. We'll see how it goes, man. But I think he could be a capable replacement for A.J. Brown. Really, I like the pick there for the Seahawks getting Charles Cross, even though it was a little bit too late. The Saints get their wide receiver. You sit there and look at some of the other teams in the NFC South. The Falcons get their wide receiver. We'll see how that turns out. Again, we'll go over these a lot closer next week. Logan Hall, he heads to Tampa Bay with that first pick of the second round, the 33rd pick overall. And there's one player that I did not mention is Roger McCreary, the cornerback out of Auburn. He was the 35th pick overall. He heads to the Tennessee Titans. And I think, obviously, the cornerback position has always been a kind of a need for the Tennessee Titans. I don't think there's any question the Titans can use some help there. That is a humongous pick, in my opinion. Just kind of skimming through some of these other picks. George Pickens, he went to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Another physical guy, 6'3", can kind of go up and get the ball. He had his injury issues, but I think if he can get over those, that can be a really good pick for the Steelers. Again, really good stuff. And we're going to, like I said, go over my draft grades for the NFC South and AFC South teams. We're going to do that pretty much in depth on my next episode. Anyway, man, like I said, I am glad that you're joining me here for this episode. Before I go to break, just want to let you know what we're going to be talking about here for the rest of the show. Not going to keep you too long today. We're going to get into, obviously, the NBA playoffs. Got a lot to talk about there. A lot to talk about if we begin the second round. Not a single 7-game series in the first round. The first time that's happened since 2011, if I'm not mistaken. So, really wanted to come to you earlier this week, maybe Thursday or Friday, but I thought, I'm going to let these games kind of play out. And the Memphis Grizzlies did exactly what I was kind of hoping that they would do, go on and close out the Minnesota Timberwolves the way they did last night. And so now we can get started with a clean sheet. We're done with the first round, and we'll get into the second round. We'll talk about that when Ball About the South continues. All right, y'all, we're back. And like I said, we're going to get into these NBA playoffs. We are set for the second round. And, man, what a crazy first round we saw. Even though there were no 7-game series, which is obviously very disappointing, the first round was definitely anything but uneventful. That is for sure. We had a lot go on, and we're going to kind of skim through all of that. Again, my congrats to the Memphis Grizzlies as they finished off the Minnesota Timberwolves last night. And with that matchup going that way, I'm proud to say that every one of my picks, all 8 picks for those first round matchups, I had correct. Now, I did not pick the games correctly, the number of games necessarily correctly in every series. But for the most part, I was pretty close on them on the most of them, I think. I did call for the Grizzlies to win over the Timberwolves in 6. I did have the Bulls. I may have picked the Bulls to sweep. I'm sorry, the Bucks to sweep. I'm not sure if I said sweep or maybe the Bulls would get one game. I would more than likely think that I would said the Bulls would get one game. Especially knowing the way that the Bucks have been kind of playing around and just kind of looking like they thought they could just flip a switch or whatever. And anyway, that one came out to fruition as well. You look, and pretty much all of the other ones, man, the Suns finished off the Pelicans, which turned out to be maybe one of the better series of the first round, maybe the best series when you sit there and really look at it, because most of those games were pretty much down to the wire, or at least down to the final couple minutes and everything. And obviously the drama of a team like the Pelicans coming from nowhere to battle a team that a lot of people expect to at least get to the finals was very compelling, to say the least. So that was huge. You know, again, all of those series basically turned out, for the most part, the way that I thought that they would. Obviously, there are a couple exceptions. There are a couple exceptions of maybe the path that the series took. And I think that one of those series would definitely be the Boston Celtics and Brooklyn Nets series.
Hey, I'm here with Kev. I think that it really entails us, you know, managing this franchise together alongside Joe and Sean and just our group of family members that we have in our locker room and in our organization, you know. So it's not just about me and Kev. I don't want to make it just about that. We're cornerstones here, but, you know, we have a few other guys that are on contract, and I think we just got to make some moves this offseason and really talk about it and really be intentional about what we're building and have some fun with it, make it enjoyable, and, you know, hopefully we get to start from day one just as a squad and as a family, and we just really worry about us.
Squad, family, us. That was one Kyrie Irving, man, talking about squad, family, and us. I mean, I don't want to get political with this thing. I tried not to. But, I mean, are you kidding me right now? Kyrie, the reason this team didn't gel, and these remarks from Kyrie Irving are coming off the heels of him talking about how the team couldn't gel because, you know, from October to April, like the Boston Celtics did. They don't have the continuity the way the Boston Celtics did because the Celtics have been together. And, you know, this comes on the heels of those comments. Now, the reason the Nets didn't gel is because of Kyrie Irving. Okay? And look, I'm not, obviously, I think he should have taken the vaccine, but if he didn't take the vaccine, that's fine. I'm not saying that. But don't sit there and put it out there like it's your fault. You were the guy that was not there, Kyrie. Okay, Kevin Durant wasn't there for a while, but he wasn't there because he was injured. You weren't there because of preference. That was your, that's what you wanted to do. Okay, you did not want to take the vaccine. That's why the continuity was not there for the Nets. That is why the team did not gel in those 6 months from October to April. Okay, that's the difference. And now, now we've got to sit there. We've got to get together as a squad. We've got to get together as family. We've got to get together as us and discuss the future of this franchise. Come on, man. Come on, man. I mean, this whole thing is just pretty ridiculous. And unfortunately, this is what you get with Kyrie Irving. I mean, and despite everything that's going on with this Brooklyn Nets squad, there's just no way this team should have been swept by the Celtics. The Celtics are playing fantastic ball. Do not get me wrong. There's no question about that. Their defense is smothering. They have obviously one of the best offensive threats in the NBA in one Jason Tatum. They have a really good guy, good I don't know if I'd even call him a complimentary guy. I think that doesn't really do him justice, in my opinion. And Jaylen Brown, that can step up and score 30 on you at any given time. And then you have your guys like Marcus Smart and Al Horford and all those dudes on that basketball team. And now they have Robert Williams back to anchor that defense. This team is really, they are really good. There's no question about that. And Ime Udoka has done a fantastic job coaching this basketball team in his first season as a head coach. But there's no way you sit there and get swept. Okay? There's just no way. And I knew after game three, I said, okay, maybe the Nets get game three. I thought maybe you were talking about a gentleman's sweep after the Nets won. I'm sorry, after the Celtics won the first two games in Boston. I said, maybe the Nets, if they get game three, we'll talk a gentleman's sweep. 4-1, you know. But once they lost game three, game four was over. They were not going to win game four. It just was not going to happen. And I think Kyrie knew it. I mean, you saw the first game where he had 39 points. The effort was unbelievable by him. And that Kyrie Irving never entered the building again. So, again, that I thought we were talking about a series that could go six or seven games. That's kind of what I mean by some of these series kind of took a different path than we thought that they would. And this was one of those series. Another series that kind of took a different path than I thought was the Jazz and the Mavericks. I did call the Mavericks to win that series. I think they would have won the series without Luka. I know that they would have won the series without Luka. Once they figured out, you know what, we don't have to shoot all these threes. We can take the ball to the hoop. We can get Rudy Gobert in situations where he's got to guard people out on the perimeter. Or basically sometimes he's just maybe not really going to do it. So those guys, those big guys for the Mavericks, Kleber and Bertans started shooting the threes. Dinwiddie and Brunson started going crazy again to the rim. This series was over. It did not matter if Luka Doncic came back or not. And the Dallas Mavericks move on to the second round where they will face the Phoenix Suns, which was a very interesting series coming up, in my opinion. And then now the Utah Jazz, they may not be the Utah Jazz as we know them now here a couple months from now as we start free agency and talk about draft and all of that. I would expect this is going to be a different looking Utah Jazz team. I thought this was probably going to happen this year where they kind of blow this team up. I thought it should have happened a couple of years ago, but that was just my opinion. So that series, I think, went pretty much the way I thought that it would. You look at the series of the teams down this in this neck of the woods. I thought the Hawks would be a little bit more competitive. Obviously, there were some competitive games in there, but for them to be beaten in five was a little bit of a surprise. I thought they would get at least to game six, even though I'm huge on the Heat. If you've listened to my shows here in the past, you know that I have the Heat going to the finals, and I still feel really good about that. I still think that that's going to be the case. I just really didn't think that the Hawks would get beaten as soundly as they did. I really didn't. But, you know, again, that could be the sign of maybe some changes in Atlanta. We'll see. We'll see what happens there in the ATL with that. But the Miami Heat, they move on. It was an eventful first round. And, but a pretty much a predictable first round, if you ask me, because, again, the teams that I felt would move on to the second round did so. So now we talk about this second round. And these matchups. We're talking about the teams from our neck of the woods right down here in the South. You've got the Memphis Grizzlies. They're in the Western Conference. They are getting ready to host the Golden State Warriors, the number two seed and the number three seed. Then you sit there and you look at the other half of the West. Obviously, that is the Phoenix Suns being the number one seed, and they will be facing the Dallas Mavericks. On the Eastern side, you have the one seed, the Miami Heat, and the Philadelphia 76ers. And then, of course, on the other matchup on the Eastern side, the Boston Celtics, the two seed, which could be very important. We talked about that in my last episode, in my playoff preview of how Boston set it, you know, kind of set themselves up on the last day of the season. They could have just not played or, you know, just kind of given that game away and been happy with the three seed. They decided to go ahead and win that game, the last game of the season. That set them up for the two seed. Now, again, like I said back then, being the three seed, that would have matched you up with Chicago, which would have been, at that time, I thought would have been an easier series than playing Brooklyn. Well, didn't really matter when you know, grand scheme of things or whatever, but it would have set them up. Finishing second set them up to play Brooklyn, but it set them up to have home court advantage if they were able to get past Brooklyn against the Milwaukee Bucks. And that could be very, very important in this series. And now the Bucks are still without Chris Middleton. They will be without him for the remainder of this series, which could be huge. Now, the Bucks did get a really huge contribution from Grayson Allen, the dude from Duke. We know him very well. will Grayson Allen and those dudes be enough against this Boston defense? Only time will tell. I think it's going to be a very interesting series. Very interesting. On the other side of the ledger in the East, again, that 1-4 series, the Miami Heat and the Philadelphia 76ers, that came down yesterday that we have an injury to deal with there, and it is a huge one. One, Joel Embiid has an orbital fracture, and he is out indefinitely. He suffered that injury on Thursday night, game 5 of that series against Toronto, in which the Sixers won that series in 6 games. He is going to be out indefinitely, and obviously that is not a good thing. That is not a good thing, especially with the way James Harden is playing. And I tell you, man, you sit there and you think about this thing. It's really crazy how these things kind of work out. It really is. I mean, James Harden, on one hand, you sit there and you think about James Harden and all those seasons in Houston. Except for 2018 and 19 when he played with Chris Paul. Other than that, you know, I don't count Dwight Howard, man. I mean, Dwight Howard's a good ball player and everything. Don't get me wrong, but I don't look at him as elite or anything like that. I do look at Joel Embiid as elite, okay? No question about that. I do look at Kevin Durant as elite. So last season, Harden, and again, this is fault of his own. He came in out of shape, and I don't think there's any question that that contributed to having that hamstring injury the way he did last season. So the Nets were playing with the Kevin Durant. They were playing without Kyrie Irving, and James Harden was about 65%. It's kind of his fault. And now you switch it to this season. Now he gets traded to Philadelphia. Obviously, the focus is to try to win a championship, team up with Joel Embiid and those dudes there. And now Joel Embiid is injured. Just crazy stuff. Crazy, crazy stuff. And, you know, James Harden again, man, this dude, I think it's obvious that he has lost a step. He's not able to get past that initial defender the way that he used to and get into the lane. And, I mean, he can still do it to a certain degree. as far as, especially as far as, I think, setting his teammates up. And that's something he did very well in setting guys up, like Tyrese Maxey in this past series. And, of course, Tobias Harris there with the Sixers and everything. He had 15 assists in that game six. But him being out there alone, no Joel Embiid, man, that's just going to be, it's going to be rough. And I tell you what, I mean, you kind of feel robbed as a fan when you sit there and you look at that matchup, because you sit there and think about the Heat, Bam Adebayo, going up against Joel Embiid. That in itself is a big-time matchup. And then you sit there and you look at the rest of the teams, man. You look at the Tyler Heroes. You look at the Kyle Lowry's, the Jimmy Butler's. And then you look on the other side of the ledger, you know, the guys like I just mentioned, Tyrese Maxey and Tobias Harris and Danny Green. And now with the Sixers not playing a team from Canada, Tybal would be available for every game. You just feel cheated, man, when you sit there and think about Joel Embiid being out. So we don't really know how long he's going to be out. It could be a couple weeks. It could very well be the entire series. And again, maybe he's able to come back in game two or three or something. Because not only does he have the orbital fracture, but he is in concussion protocol as well. So that means he has to be out a minimum of 5 days automatically. So it's a tough situation. For me, while I think about these two Eastern Conference series, for me, I picked the Heat to go to the NBA Finals. There's no way I would pick them, even if Joel Embiid was there 100% and everything. I would still pick the Miami Heat to win the series. I would pick them if Joel Embiid was there. I'd say probably 6 games. Possibly 7, but with him, without him, I'd say 5, maybe even 4. If he's out the length of the series, hopefully that's not the case. We'll see, man. Because I mean, here's the thing about that injury, and I'll tell you what, Doc Rivers can't get a break. I mean, first of all, you could feel the tension from him. Talking about, you know, basically he was trying to talk up or kind of downplay the fact that he had lost those 3-1 series here in the last several years as a coach. I think it was 3 times that he lost 3-1 leads, if I'm not mistaken. And he kind of was making excuses for those a little bit. You could kind of feel he had the pressure going into that game six. I mean, he had Joel Embiid in the game, so they win that game. So he gets out of that. The pressure's off of him, at least for now. But then you look up and you think about Joel Embiid going down with this injury and the fact that the Sixers were up 29 points in that basketball game. Now, at that point, obviously, the game turned out to be over because they even lengthened the lead out further from that. Okay. But 29 points with, I think it was, 5-6 minutes to go. You know, again, I don't really have a problem with Doc having him in the game at that point. You kind of never know. But he is going to get roasted for that. But here's my thing. And I kind of got into a little bit of a Twitter spat with a couple Sixer fans the other night because we had some guys, some of my Rockets fans that I chat with talking, they were saying Harden. Oh, I thought Harden couldn't step up in a big game. And in game six, he stepped up and had 22 points, 15 assists, which was great. But I was like, what about game five? All I was trying to say was, Game 6 wouldn't have even been necessary if Harden and the Sixers had stepped up and handled their business at home in Game 5. Game 6 wouldn't have even been necessary. Okay? And you know, we kind of had a going back and forth on that, you know, whatever. I'm just like, okay, whatever, man. You know, y'all can sit there and praise Harden all you want, but we've seen Harden let teams down in these situations before. And, you know, and the Sixers, a team themselves that has been known not to be able to close the deal in these series. That's basically all I was trying to mention. But it is what it is. But my point still remains. I mean, if you close this thing out in game five the way you should have, and you definitely should not have been blown out. Now, if you lose a game, obviously Toronto's a very good team. Nick Nurse, very good coach. Not saying any of that. Not taking anything away from the Toronto Raptors. I thought this would be a game seven type series. I thought this would be a seven game series. So, obviously, I had much respect for the Raptors, even though I picked the Sixers to win the series. The fact is, you were up 3-0, and you got it. The Raptors got it back to 3-2 with game six in their building. It should not have gotten to that point. Point blank simple. And at some point, man, yeah, Doc is responsible for this. There's no question about that because he's the head coach. But at the same time, I fault these players. Whether it's if they had gone on and blown this series, I would have been looking at James Harden and Joel Embiid, not Doc Rivers. Just like when the Clippers blew the lead against the Rockets in 2015, up 3-1, I looked at Chris Paul. I looked at Blake Griffin. I looked at Jamal Crawford. I didn't look at Doc Rivers. Same thing. I'm not saying there's no responsibility from the head coach. That's not what I'm saying. But you can't sit there and roast the head coach without roasting the players as well. That's just my point. So anyway, man, in that series, again, I have to go with the Heat. I thought that, again, I would have gone with the Heat regardless if Embiid was healthy or not. and again, in that second series, excuse me, there in the East, man, that is a tough one to call. My first reaction, my initial pick was the Bucks. And I think that's how I picked it in my preview show. I don't know, man. Without Chris Middleton and with the Celtics having home court advantage, I think I'm going to have to go to the Boston Celtics in this series. Even though I really did like the way that the Bucks handled themselves in the last couple of games in that Chicago series, finally, again, this is another team that was not really handling their business. They should have swept the Bulls. I'm going to go with Boston to win this series. So I'm going to change up. And it's simply because of Chris Middleton. And then this kind of the landscape to me has changed just a little bit since I made that pick. And now when you switch over to the West, man, you sit there again, talk about that matchup. Phoenix, the 1 seed, Dallas, the 4 seed, Luka Doncic. Very interesting series. I think in a lot of ways, man, Doncic being injured may have been a good thing, may have been a blessing in disguise for this Dallas team. I think a lot of times they've become a little bit too dependent, maybe a lot too dependent on Luka. And I think seeing that guys like Dinwiddie and Brunson can make plays as well could help this team. Now, I don't know what you get really with Doncic playing off the ball necessarily. Obviously, he has the ball in his hands so much. I don't know, man. I think that they can give Phoenix some problems. I really do. Ultimately, I think Phoenix wins this series. I just don't see a scenario where Dallas wins the series. I just don't. But I do think Dallas can contend. I think that they can make this long series. I definitely think they can make Phoenix sweat. The Suns did get Devin Booker back, which is huge. I thought maybe he would be out another few days, but he was able to come back during that game six against New Orleans, and obviously that helped. Chris Paul, man, this dude was a perfect 14 of 14 from the field in that clinching win over the Pelicans. That's incredible stuff. Incredible stuff, but also incredible season, incredible effort by the Pelicans. And the future is just so bright for that Pelican squad. It is just crazy when you sit there and you look at it. You talk about Brandon Ingram. You talk about C.J. McCollum, Herb Jones. The list goes on. And if you can add Zion Williamson to that list, man, like I said, I mean, again, I would not be totally against the Pelicans at least exploring what can they get for a guy like Zion. I would not be mad at them if they did that. But obviously the goal is to get Zion into the mix. And if they do, you could be talking about something serious there in New Orleans. So, but again, in that series, I have to go with the Suns. You know, I think the Suns are definitely going to the NBA Finals. I still think that, and I have them beating the Dallas Mavericks. I'm going to say, man, I'm going to say 6 games. I think Dallas gets a couple games in this series. I'm really kind of in between going 5 and 6. I don't think this goes 7. I think Dallas is ready to win a couple games. I do. I wouldn't be shocked if it went 7, but I think it goes 6. That's what I'm going to call in that series. And then you look at the other series, the Golden State Warriors and the Memphis Grizzlies. That should be very interesting. The Grizzlies are kind of what I kind of thought that they probably would be, even though, look, we talked about their talent. We talked about how dominant they have looked at certain points of this season. But I thought once we got into the playoffs, some of that would kind of I kind of thought that they would not quite live up to those. I didn't think they would get to those heights, really, where they would kind of be showing their dominance like that. And we saw it in this series, man. There's a lot of inconsistencies about this team. This team has some holes. They're still very young. There's no question about that in a lot of positions. And you sit there and you look at it from that standpoint, because I tell you what, Memphis could have easily lost this series to the Minnesota Timberwolves. And again, just like I said about the Raptors, I don't mean to sit here and disrespect the Timberwolves, but dude, I mean, to me, the Timberwolves, you should have beaten them, man. They should have beaten them probably a little bit more soundly. And I tell you, if the Timberwolves had kind of cleaned up some of their inconsistencies, we'd be talking about a totally different series, and we'd be talking about game one being in San Francisco against the T-Wolves instead of it being game one Memphis hosting Golden State. That's just point blank. So that being said, man, I just can't see the Grizzlies winning this series despite them having home court advantage. I think they'll probably get one in Memphis. I think they probably go back. They may get one in Memphis. Then maybe go back to go to San Francisco 1-1. After that, I just think the Golden State Warriors are going to be too much for them, and I think they'll probably handle this series in 5 games. Possibly 6, but I'm going to go 5. So you sit there and you look at my picks for the second round here in the NBA playoffs. I've got in Eastern Conference, I've got the Boston Celtics beating the Bucks in 6 or 7 games. I think it's still going to be a long series. That game 7 being in Boston may just be the difference for the Celtics to beat the Milwaukee Bucks, the defending champs. In the other Eastern Conference series, without Joel Embiid, at least for now, I'd have to go and stick with the Miami Heat defeating the Sixers. I'm going to call that in 5 games right now, dependent on Joel Embiid, of course. And then you switch over to the West. I've got the Phoenix Suns beating the Dallas Mavericks in 6 games. And I have, in that other series out West, I have the Golden State Warriors beating the Memphis Grizzlies in 5. So there you have it, man. Those are my thoughts on the NBA. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to get into a little bit of USFL really quick when Ball About the South continues. All right, y'all. Last and final segment of this episode 26 of Ball About the South with C. Wood. Want to touch on the USFL for a few minutes while we're sitting there. Obviously talking about the draft and everything. And USFL is going on tonight again here, right here in Birmingham. And what a night it was for the Birmingham Stallions again. They go 3-0 on the season with their victory over the New Orleans Breakers, the previously unbeaten New Orleans Breakers, which were 2-0. Don't know if you guys have really gotten into this league. Obviously, I've gotten into this league because it's right here in my hometown. And I've been to one of the games that did not involve the Stallions, and I've been to the Stallion games as well. Until tonight, I did not go to the Stallions game tonight. Unfortunately, I was unable to make it. But, man, it's just been really good football, in my opinion. Now, again, is it NFL? No, obviously it's not. I've seen a lot of people kind of tearing down the league a little bit, to a degree. And, I'm just sitting there thinking like, okay, maybe you're just more of a casual fan, because I think when you talk about spring leagues, being football and everything, I think it's kind of more catering to the hardcore football fans that really thrive for football year round. And now the NFL does a fantastic job, in a lot of ways. There are a lot of things I could get down on the NFL about. Okay. I'm not talking about on the field. I'm talking about off the field and everything. But one of the things that you have to give the NFL credit for in the off season is, keeping the product compelling in the months that we don't have actual action on the field. You see that with the draft. You see that with the way they pump up free agency. You see that here coming up on May 12th, where we're going to have the schedule release. Now, of course, the NBA is kind of doing that to a degree, the schedule release, which I don't really understand. Because I'm sitting there like, you're talking about 82 games compared to 17 games now. That's a lot different thing. You're talking about a product that's in the NFL that's lasting a little over 3 months. Then regular season, 3.5 months, something like that. And you're talking about a product in the NBA that's lasting like 6 or 7. Okay. So, I don't really get that. But I think it's a good thing that the NFL does, and to keep the fan involved in the sport, even though there's not action on the field. So now you come with this USFL thing. And we've seen these spring leagues come about here in the last several years. Now, I'm a guy that grew up in the 80s, and I remember the first USFL. And the first USFL, man, oh my goodness, it was fire. Now, one reason it was fire was because of the fact that they were trying to compete with the NFL. So they were paying contracts comparable to what the NFL was paying and all of that good stuff. I'm sure a lot of you guys know the history of that league. And, you had players like Herschel Walker and Jim Kelly and Steve Young and Bobby Hebert and Sam Mills. And the list goes on and on and on and on. And then the thing I hated more than anything else about the league, to be honest, was Birmingham, the team here, the Stallions, selected Jerry Rice in that last USFL draft. And I don't know if he would have ever played here. I can't really say, because obviously he would have had an opportunity to go to the NFL, but there were a lot of players that had an opportunity to go to the NFL straight out of college, just like Herschel Walker did, just like Doug Flutie's another name, just like those guys did, and they chose the USFL. So who knows? Maybe Jerry Rice would have chosen the USFL. I don't know. We'll never know the answer to that question. But, man, just seeing the USFL back and to see the uniforms back pretty much very close to what they were when the in the original, you know, of the OG USFL, right? It's just been cool, man. And I don't know. I don't really understand why there isn't more of a buzz. And I think the TV ratings have done okay for the most part. They did really well the first weekend. They kind of dropped off last weekend, which I guess that's understandable. We'll see how things go this weekend, because you had this is the big matchup. Both those teams, 2-0, the Breakers and the Stallions. Stallions end up winning that game 22-13 over New Orleans. Pretty decent crowd, I guess, at Protective Stadium here in Birmingham. That's been another issue, or at least another talking point here, is why aren't there more people attending the games? I've got my ideas on that, and a lot of people have their ideas, but I really want this to be a good opportunity for Birmingham. Obviously, it is a good opportunity for Birmingham. I mean, it puts Birmingham at least on some positive, sheds some positive light on the city of Birmingham, which there's a lot of negative that has obviously followed the city of Birmingham for years and years and years and years, and which is in a lot of ways to me at this point a little bit unfair, because we're like, you know, you sit there, you talk about the civil rights era and everything, everyone knows about Birmingham's role in that, but that was 50 something 60 years ago. Okay, Birmingham is not quite the same city. Is there racism and all that? Sure. I mean, but there's racism everywhere. There's nowhere that you can't say there's not racism, okay? So, you know, again, I've just really enjoyed this opportunity for the city of Birmingham. I'm going to try to attend as many games as I can. I want to go to Sunday's games. Unfortunately, they're talking about rain, so I'm not really sure that I'm going to be able to make it. But I definitely suggest that you check out the games, man. We're not talking about stars, but I think we see some NFL talent on that football field. I don't think there's any question. And hey, the Stallions, my team, 3-0 out the gate. Cannot complain about that. And that's actually using the backup quarterback, Jamar Smith. He has looked really good. Did not look good tonight, though. At one point, don't see his stats right here, but I want to say he ended off tonight 16 of 38, which was not good at all. He had one interception, but he had those two touchdown passes. And he had that one touchdown pass there toward the end of the game to Bolden, the wide receiver number 7 there in the corner of the end zone. That put the Stallions up for good. That made the score 17-13 at that point. Stallions get a safety, make it 19-13, and then they end up getting a turnover from the Breakers. I think had the interception on the short field. They end up kicking the field goal right there to make it 22-13. I think these two teams are the best two teams in the USFL right now. I've watched every one of the teams. I've watched just about every one of the games. Maybe not fully the entire game on all those occasions, but I've watched quite a bit of it. And from what I can tell, those two teams are the best. I would say Tampa Bay is probably next in line, even though a lot of Steeler fans would not want to believe that. With Todd Haley being the head coach of that team, they sit 2-1 right now. I thought that was funny. Really, really kind of funny as you see some of the coaches. Todd Haley is one of them. I just remember Steeler fans just coming down on this dude so big all the time, every Monday morning after a Sunday loss by the Steelers, because of his offense, man. He was the offensive coordinator there for many years. We all know that. And then seeing a guy like Jeff Fisher back in the head coaching ranks, I have no clue. I have no earthly idea how they sat there and hired this dude. I mean, you know, again, all I can sit there and think about, and I really kind of, I have to laugh it off, because I kind of get mad when I sit there and think about Jeff Fisher and how he handcuffed Vince Young, in my opinion, for so many years there at Tennessee. I'm not sitting there telling you that Jeff Fisher is all Jeff Fisher's fault or anything like that, what happened to Vince Young, but It played a little bit of a hand in it. I don't think there's any question, man. I mean, you get quarterbacks of that nature, you know, you have to cater your offense around him. You can't sit there and tell a guy that, you know, loves to scramble and use his feet to make plays or whatever. You just can't all of a sudden just make him be a drop back quarterback. And I think now we're finally kind of getting that through the heads of some of these coaches and offensive coordinators in the NFL, is we're seeing these guys finally let these guys be themselves, and then you cater the offense around their talent, not try to mold them into something that they're not. And it's making, again, it's really making for a lot better for guys like Lamar Jackson and Kyler Murray and Patrick Mahomes, and the list goes on and on. And now you sit there and you look at a draft where we had a guy going to the Tennessee Titans by the name of Malik Willis, who sits 6 foot, 219 pounds. He has, I think, a really good shot of excelling in this league because of that. So, I don't know, man. That's crazy. All I can say is it was a really good draft from what I can tell. Again, we're going to go over it big time next week when I come to you with my next episode. We're going to do some draft grades for each of the NFC and AFC South teams, plus do a little bit of a general overview of the draft itself as from the NFL as a whole. But I definitely would encourage you to check out those USFL games if you're a football fan at all. I think that you will enjoy them. I'm hoping this league sticks. I'm hoping that it makes it. I'm seeing rumblings of a rivalry between the New Orleans Breakers and the Birmingham Stallions right now. I've already kind of seen that. A lot of New Orleans fans were in town for the game tonight. I think that is exciting. And, again, I think there's definitely room for at least one spring league. We'll see if we can have two next year when the XFL does their thing. So, good football weekend, the draft, USFL, all of that. Obviously, we got the NBA playoffs again as well. You got my picks. You know what I'm talking about. Obviously, we're going to talk about what we see in these first couple of games of the second round when I come at you next week right here on Ball About the South. Again, my name is Kerry Wood, at C Wood on Sports on Twitter and IG is where you can find me. Chat it up with me on either of those social media platforms, also Facebook as well. Hit me up. Let me know what you think about the show. Like, subscribe, do all those things on no matter what platform you're listening to, Apple, Google, Spotify. You know how we do it here on Ball About the South. Again, my name is Kerry Wood. Call me C Wood for short. Look forward to seeing you next week right here again. Enjoy the games and be safe.